Mini episode 695 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Somebody's work who was not slipping during this period was Edge.
Yep.
Very good. Was this peak Edge?
Yeah, I think so. We were squarely in that. Yeah,
he had gotten away. You know, there are stories that he was. You know, it's kind of funny. Most guys didn't like to have to go over to SmackDown during this period because of its B-show stink. A lot of stories that Edge was quite pleased to head over there and not be in the Triple H orbit any longer.
He's a smart guy,
from what I understand. So he remember it was kind of crazy how he went over to SmackDown. And because Kennedy had won Money in the Bank at WrestleMania.
Right.
But then he had the misdiagnosis with the injury, and they panicked. And they're like, oh, we got to take the title off this guy. Because remember, the original plan, and I loved it. Because unlike now when Money in the Bank, it's just like, okay, when's the guy going to sneakily cash it in and win?
Right.
Fine. It's just the same thing every year. They try, you know, the first couple of years, the plans were all unique. You know, Edge did that and really got the Money in the Bank gimmick on the map. But no one saw that coming. When they did it, it was like the most original thing ever.
And the very next year, RVD saved it.
But RVD, he wanted to cash it in at a very specific time at the ECW pay-per-view.
That's right.
And that show, as much as Paul Heyman said in retrospect, doing a second one-night stand pay-per-view might have been too much. He did.
What about the brand itself, if he thinks that?
Oh, yeah, he agrees with that. But that second one-night stand show in 06 did work as a proper vehicle to get RVD over as the world champion.
Yep.
So Kennedy wins it, and he announces, I'm going to cash this in and be in the main event of WrestleMania 24. I loved that. The problem was, Ken Kennedy did not have a good 2007. He had the misdiagnosis.
Right.
And then we already talked about him acting like a fool and getting busted in the
signature
pharmacy
case. So they would have taken it off one way or another.
Yeah, so it wasn't going to work. He did not have a good 07, but Edge did. So he was the one show. He beat Kennedy for his Money in the Bank.
Yep.
Remember, on a Raw, after they feared Kennedy was out. And then he came in, and for the second time in 3 years, or it was really the second time in 18 months, he came down and sneakily won the world title because The Undertaker got hurt, too, by Mark Henry in a cage match.
Right.
And he came out and pinned him. And Edge really was the reason to watch SmackDown in 07. He carried that brand. So we're talking about...
They were hurt by his absence because he had to surrender it over the summer. He had the torn, I think, pec. He has to surrender it. Great Khali becomes champion in a battle royal. It goes on to Batista. It gets transitioned back onto Edge later in the year. It was a three-way. Edge, Undertaker, Batista.
Edge
gets it back.
That's right. He did leave for a little bit. That's right.
Yeah.
Batista and Undertaker had a good Hell in the Cell match. Didn't they have Survivor Series? Am I thinking, got my years right?
They
was a good Hell in the Cell. Yeah, because it's the one where Edge comes back. He's the cameraman, remember?
Right.
And he interferes. And then after he interferes, he goes back and pretends like he's still the cameraman. That was outstanding. But we're not just randomly talking about how good Edge was, folks.
He defends here next against
Rey Mysterio. It's his time. I can't believe this was not in your notes prominently. I was, like, aghast when we were talking about this before in the air. The pro-Edge crowd here took me aback. What was that all about? The only thing I could come up with is that it's MSG, and they were kind of appreciative of how good of a performer Edge had become at this point. Because other than 2014, when he comes out and it's not Daniel Bryan, and the old, speaking of one-night stand, the first one, when we get, I'm at a 619, Ray. I can't remember Rey Mysterio ever being booed like he was in this match.
Well, and here's the thing. Again, I'm going to give a mea culpa on this. So again, for anybody that's listening, I mean, I'm comfortable standing on my record. Obviously, I have pretty detailed notes for all of these shows. I am, however, always multitasking when I have this on. And all I can assume is maybe I had the sound down a little bit for this match or whatever. I didn't pick up on this.
Oh,
I freely admit it. People can crucify me for that. I will tell you that in you relating it to me, I find that to be very surprising. And I don't have any kind of explanation for it aside from New York can be a kind of smark-heavy area.
Pro-heel.
Pro-heel.
I mean, remember, they used to boo Sean out of the building
all
the time.
Yeah. I mean, and Sean, you know, Sean's 96 run was fairly white meat, just like Rey Mysterio always is. So maybe it's just
I was just trying to think about, like, what Rey could have done that would have turned the crowd again, that would have made the crowd so vociferous in not wanting to see him win here. The setup to this match was not great. They went over it. By the way, I have to say this.
Yeah.
I absolutely love the videos with Edge and Vicky Guerrero. As bad as that storyline was, it is cheesy.
They kept repeatedly referring to Edge's lover, Vicky Guerrero.
I mean, okay. It wasn't, I mean, poor Vicky Guerrero. God bless her.
I know, yeah.
But it was just sort of comical. And they showed these very cheesy, over-the-top videos of them,
right,
like, walking on a bridge and kissing.
Right.
I couldn't help but laugh.
That was funny.
But
The only thing I can think of with Rey is probably the most famous example ever of where, and we've talked about this before, of where the setup was all wrong as far as Playboy versus Family Man. Flair Steamboat 89, that's the thing. Sometimes white meat against a cool heel. And Edge,
especially
at this point,
now, more so now than in 89.
Well, and here's the thing, too.
Like the Flair Steamboat dynamic?
That was weird for
its
time.
There was some back. Well, for its time, it was still understandable. But if they did it like 10 years after that, it would have been completely shit on.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And here's the thing, too. I think with what you're talking about with Edge and the whole thing of where they're doing these cheesy videos, but, like, people are laughing, it gets to a thing of appreciating, and this is the smart markism of New York and whatever, appreciating the performer. What's one of the most popular acts on today's show is New Day, because it's, you know, and don't get me wrong, I hated them as faces. Like, what the hell are they doing? And now as heels, like, they're so entertaining, they make me laugh every week, whatever. I think Edge was getting some of that. It was like, this act is just so great, we're cheering for him. And Rey was just, I think, collateral damage. It wasn't anything he was doing wrong.
Yeah, I think that.
But you're talking about peak Edge. This was.
It probably was. I mean, in my notes, as I'm going through my notes here.
Yeah.
I have, crowd was pro-Edge from the start. I mean, really pro-Edge.
Yeah.
Like, I just keep saying, I'm like, and then it's like, my God, is this crowd cheering Edge.
Right.
The setup to this match was not great. Rey won one of those awful beat-the-clock challenge things that I hate, and he did it in a manner where he was, like, helped by Undertaker and Batista. That never does anything. So, whereas Edge was positioned as strong on the heel side, Rey really wasn't a strong. That was the thing, too. I don't think he was a very strong babyface contender, but I'll say this. This was a good match. I thought it was in the 3.25, 3.5-star range. Edge wins clean, spearing him out of his boots.
Right.
Which made the fact that they came back with a rematch and No Way Out a little peculiar. You have the heel go over very clean and you do a rematch?
Well, you know, for as much as we bash the company sometimes for their continuity issues, I feel like we have to take our hat off to them here, however reluctantly. You know, Rey, while he was champion in 06, was booked like an invalid, and Rey as a challenger here in 08 is booked like an invalid.
I'll say this, Rey came out with this cool helmet over his mask. I liked that. I also liked there was a spot he did where he slid out of the ring into a swinging DDT.
Uh-huh.
That was cool.
Right.
The finish was before the Edge getting the spear and pinning him clean. I guess it wasn't totally clean. Vicky did the old Vince out of the wheelchair routine. Because remember, Vicky was being wheeled around during this point. Why was she in the wheelchair again? I can't remember.
I think Undertaker had tombstoned her or something like that.
Well, she gets out of the wheelchair. My God, she's okay. You know, it didn't get a ton of heat for her doing that, but she pulled the ref out when Rey was pinning Edge, and then she blocked the 619.
Yeah.
So Rey went for the 619 on Edge, and, like, Vicky came up and, like, hugged Edge on the apron, and she took it.
Yeah.
Shame on Michael Cole. I have this in my notes for dropping a "love hurts" line. Shame on you, Mike. And then right after that, you know, Ray kind of checks. Oh my God, because they still were playing up the Ray Vicky relationship here,
right?
Like, oh, what are you doing with Edge? You know, she was like, he's like, I still care for you and stuff. And you know, that's when he got kind of distracted and he tried springboarding and got speared. And
I have in my notes that I felt like the match was a little hurt by the shenanigans at the latter parts of it. There,
really? I thought the crowd was. I mean, although the crowd was cheering pretty wildly for the heel, they were hot, and I thought it was a good world title match. The Edgeheads, by the way, a very brief cameo here. They were booted early in the match. Zack Ryder.
Yeah.
New York's own.
Well, and again, I got nothing against the performers involved in it, but if you want to talk about the politics of Raw versus SmackDown, and I've commented on this until I'm blue in the face, you know, Triple H had Evolution. The heel champion on SmackDown always had jobbers, and there you go. A couple of guys that are just jobbers.
They tried. I always seem like, didn't Edge like really want to help these guys? Edge is always like one of those guys who like was looking to elevate other people, and
sure.
I feel that.
But it goes back to the days of the Horsemen. You got to have people around you with credibility, or your credibility dips.
I mean, they were flunkies. It wasn't a group like Evolution. It was flunkies.
Yeah,
and it was flunkies that really didn't get.
But
over
they
that
were act. Introduced, I think, in one of his key matches, maybe either when he won the title or a key defense shortly thereafter. I mean, you can't have jobbers basically deciding the outcome of main event matches. That's just going to kill your product. It would be like if Ric Flair hired the Mulkey brothers in 1987 in lieu of having the Horsemen. You can't do that.
Or if he worked with Ron Garvin.
That was a fine feud with a fine wrestler. But
so that's that. So yeah. I thought the match was okay. That was a good world title match. It wasn't a top 10 non-Rumble match at, you know what I'm saying? Like if you were to take out the Royal Rumble matches and make a top 10 list of undercard matches on Royal Rumbles, it doesn't make that, but I thought it was a fine match.
Basically a fun match on a fun show. I agree with you. There was some backstage goofiness then with Kennedy and Flair, and then DX comes in.
Those like shameless plugs that DX would do.
Right.
I know that like we could be like criticized for being too negative. Those were never funny.
Well, speaking of never funny, Santino was in the next
segment.
Santino
was, I thought he was funny at times, but this... Are you not a Santino? I figured you'd be a Santino guy.
Well, you know what? Here's the thing. I loved heel Santino. Which was here. So I have to give credit to it. Face Santino, we've talked about this before. Things that when non-wrestling fans see us watching the product and we get embarrassed, face Santino never failed to be that guy to me. Heel Santino, I'll at least give him credit here. He interrupts the Kiss Cam thing. It was about the Playboy magazine thing.
Yeah, I have here. I love the WWE's version of feminism is that all women just yearn to pose in Playboy in their world. So, again, we're not in the PG era. So, Maria, who is attractive, was one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Was going to pose for Playboy, and she wound up doing it. And they were doing the story, do you guys want to see me pose in Playboy? Like, you know, I wonder what the answer is going to be. And, by the way, Ashley Massaro, her role in all this, you talk about awful.
Really weird.
Oh,
totally
God.
Weird.
First of all, she had maybe the worst entrance music of anyone ever.
Right.
That, I'm going to, like, it was this gritty voice, I'm going to love you nice.
Just weird, yeah.
That was just hideous. It was one of the worst songs ever. And she was like, come on, Maria, you know you want to pose for, because she had done it already.
Right.
Come on, Maria, you know you want to, you know, really step up for feminism and pose in Playboy like the rest of us.
The
you know,
pro-feminist
you wanna,
angle.
Yeah, you want to continue that great tradition of posing in Playboy, and Santino was like, no, she doesn't. And I guess it was okay to get heat.
By the way.
I haven't heard that. I forgot that how good Santino was as a heel.
This was
good. You're right. His face roll was tiresome.
The other thing, too, spoiler alert for anybody that...
I'm going to love you nice. I cannot get that out of my head now. That was so bad. People need to
go back.
Thanks
for putting it in mind.
People need to go back and listen to Ashley Massaro's theme song. It was so heinous.
Speaking of heinous... For anybody who doesn't remember, spoiler alert, the actual Playboy spread itself, you talk about kayfabe in the old, for lack of a more PC term, curtains. My goodness. Could those legs have been crossed tighter? She didn't show anything, basically. I mean...
Who, Maria?
Yeah, you talk about false advertising.
Oh, I don't remember you know, at all. Do you know what's funny? I've never bought one of them.
I happened to see that, I think, at the old Sports Talk Network here, and I was like, okay, there's the agreed-upon upper nudity. Lower nudity, not so much. They kind of kayfabed it. So it is what it is.
Yeah.
But from there...
Guess what? Playboy, is, as we know, you know, they were fighting an uphill battle against the online porn world.
They were. They were indeed. You know?
It's kind of fun. Like, Playboy to me, like, it's funny, like, with the... like, because obviously now Playboy doesn't even do the... they've totally shifted kind of what they're doing now. They don't even do fully nude spreads anymore.
How is this for a trend?
And so, like, it's funny that this was considered such a big deal.
Right.
And it's, like, not even 10 years ago.
Right.
And now it's like, oh, geez, Playboy? What a dated thing that is.
That's right. And before they went full-on PG and wouldn't have been doing this anyways, how's this for a transitional analogy segue? Playboy's battle against online porn was more or less like Jeff Hardy's battle against the glass ceiling. You almost got a spit take on your monitor there. I told you I was going to transition it.
I see where you're going, and
yeah.
I don't know how effective it was, but it did transition nonetheless, and
right.
Let's go to it. So I talked earlier about the business numbers
right.
with this show. This show has to be considered a success business-wise, and why do I not have that page up anymore? God bless America.
After you promised you were going to...
Okay, hold on. Don't worry. It's going to be my saved anyway. Buy rates, WWE. Okay, here we go. So this show was up from 97, or 07, pardon me. It was definitely up from 97, pretty considerably.
Okay.
2007 Royal Rumble did 491,000 buys, down from 550 the previous year. And I liked the 2007 Rumble a lot. And as we know, WrestleMania 23... did very well
mm-hmm.
with the involvement of Donald Trump. This show, 2008, back up to 533. And in 2009,
wow.
things would drop all the way down to 450. So there was clearly, despite all the stuff you talked about the end of 07 being bad,
mm-hmm.
there was clearly interest in this show. This is one of the first things when researching kind of the background of the show and going through it again
right.
that caught my eye, that this show did well on pay-per-view. And with John Cena... who everyone just assumed was out, you know, no one knew what was going to happen there. I was wondering, why would this show do so well? And in doing the reading, I think a lot of it had to do with Jeff Hardy.
Could be.
I think people really wanted to see him go over here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to open up our discussion here of Jeff Hardy versus Randy Orton, the Raw title match,
uh-huh.
by asking you, should Jeff Hardy have gone over here?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Here's what, okay. On a previous mini episode, I can't remember if it was the 04 or 05, I had mentioned or alluded to that I was going to go over what I would have done with Randy Orton in that era.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't think I ever did. So we're going to come back to it here. I'm almost positive I never did.
Okay.
Because I think after we finished, I said, damn it, I never went into that.
Okay.
And I think now's as good a time as ever to do it. I'm going to tell you why. So they showed this video package for Randy Orton. Did you pick up on this at all?
Yes.
You know what I'm going to say?
Not necessarily word for word, but okay. I think I know the general direction.
So the video package was really good for Orton, showing him being at the top. He was at the top of his game here. I thought this was, we talked about peak edge
mm-hmm.
a little bit ago. Orton was, if he wasn't totally at the apex, he was close. Here, I think.
I think to me it was more so 2009.
Okay.
But this was.
He was
building towards.
Yes.
It.
So the video package just showed him at OVW and it really put him over. Oh, I'm this guy, third generation, built, you know, born to be a star. It rehashed all the great stuff he did when he was Intercontinental Champion as a part of Evolution, you know, the Mick Foley feud.
Uh huh.
Showed him winning the world title. But it sort of skirted over 2005 and 2006.
Uh-huh.
Didn't you think, like, it was almost
yeah.
like, okay, it showed him RKOing Undertaker. It showed him RKOing Hogan.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he lost those matches. I mean, he did beat The Undertaker, I think, once
got
at
like a
SummerSlam.
Token win, yeah.
But he lost to the big matches, WrestleMania
right.
and the Hell in a Cell, and then he obviously lost to Hogan at SummerSlam 06. And it just sort of made me think that man, like, it's so fun. It almost was that those 2 years were like the lost years for it, and he was kind of being a dick, and
right. He
had some issues, and there were reasons why he wasn't pushed all the way.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel that this was the Orton that we all were kind of hoping for midway through 04.
Right.
When, you know, he got that out of nowhere face turn, was sort of buried by Triple H, and then just, I don't know, underachieved for
right. The
better part of 2 years.
That's right.
It just struck me
that
video package, it kind of, and it, you know, when, you know, from WWE's perspective, they're like, oh, you people bitching about wins and losses, no one remembers all that stuff. And it's just funny that this video package shows him RKOing Hulk Hogan like it's a big deal, but in the back, I'm like, well, he lost that match.
Right.
You know, and he lost to Undertaker more often than not. But it was almost like they wanted you to forget those years happened. Like, it's like, okay, Randy Orton was on the ascent. He achieved his destiny of being the world champion, and he's ready to dominate. But sort of ignoring the fact that for 2 years, he wasn't really dominating.
I've used this term before on the program here. This is something that, again, as somebody who for many years on and off watched the late lamented show Guiding Light, and there is something in the old soap opera community called retconning that they like to talk about.
Yes.
Retroactive continuity. And it's a thing of where what we're showing you now is what you were supposed to believe happened. Never mind, that's not how it played out. It's our version of history today.
Sometimes that
also
works.
Known as rewriting history.
Retcon, you know, it's funny. That's the second time I was listening to another podcast, mm-hmm. the Between the Sheets podcast.
Okay.
And I'll be honest with you, I had not really heard the term retcon used that much, but I quickly picked up on its meaning.
Is that Brian Fritz's one?
No, it's Chris Zellner and David Bixby's.
Oh, okay.
They go over the old observers. It's good. I mean,
Fritz, a past lounge guest. He's a great podcast
I'm not being
host.
Paid to tout anything. I just really like the podcast a lot. And Bixby's, he used the term retcon in relation to Tito Santana's involvement in the Danny Davis angle.
That's right.
Where they were able to go back and say, oh, look, Danny Davis did a crappy job of officiating Tito Santana's IC titles. And it worked at that point.
Because like, that was a case. They just played it like, oh, the ref missed it.
Yeah. But, mm-hmm. like, that actually worked. But anyway, I cut you off.
No. I got my whole point out. That's all I wanted to say.
All right. So, I want to talk about Randy Orton.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't go over this and I really wanted to.
Yeah.
And then we'll talk about Jeff Hardy.
Okay.
There's a lot of fantasy booking alert going on here. We know the plan in 04 was always for Orton to beat Benoit.
Right.
My question was, what was to become of Triple H then? Because we know what happened. Triple H based, you know, they Evolution dumps Orton.
Right.
Triple H just beats Orton.
Right.
That feud's done in a month, and then, you know, Batista comes into the fold and really sort of saves the day
right. For
what could have been pretty catastrophic.
Yes.
For the guy, the main heel you were building up, you just turn him face and cast him aside.
Right.
Now, for those who may forget or don't know, Triple H was supposed to go over to SmackDown in 04 originally.
That's right.
And oppose Eddie Guerrero, presumably in the world title program. That's why, if anyone ever wonders, why did they elevate JBL so quickly? It was because Triple H, I think, just pretty much refused to go to SmackDown.
Right.
Remember, there was some trade. They even did it, and then he got traded back. Wasn't
right.
that 04?
Right. And here's the thing, too.
To make himself look good. And so
I think it was Booker T and the Dudleys who got traded over there, and I've always thought to myself, again, one of my biggest criticisms about the whole JBL thing is that they did it overnight. You can't overnight make somebody into a main eventer.
Unfortunately, they had no choice because Eddie was imploding.
I'd have put Booker T in there.
Well, I'll tell you what I would have done.
As a stopgap.
So this is a benefit of hindsight thing. Mm-hmm. It's always easier to do things with benefit of hindsight.
Well, I would have said at the time put Booker T in there as a stopgap.
Okay, well, there clearly was not room. So here are your options with Randy Orton in 04.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you send Triple H over to SmackDown, and then he would have kind of been the new de facto top heel, and that could have worked. But if Triple H was going to refuse to do that,
or you keep slow burning him. Orton had only been in that spot for a year, Kyle.
Okay, well, hold on. Let's, like, what do you do? So Orton wins the title. Presumably, what most people think is it should have been Orton ousting Triple H as the leader, kind of the old Rock Farouk thing. Now, I'm not trying to compare Triple H to Farouk. That's unfair. But you know what I'm saying, where he kind of usurps the leadership and is the new, and Orton's the heel leader of Evolution. Triple H goes babyface. I don't think Triple H wanted to do that either.
Right.
So if they had any long-term planning, they needed a new heel on SmackDown. I think Orton needed to get away from Triple H. And he should have been moved to SmackDown in 04. And he should have been the guy to beat Eddie.
I still don't know if he would have been ready. But, you know, listen, anybody was more ready than JBL.
He had been built up so well that I think you could have built... I think building SmackDown in 04 around a heel Randy Orton certainly would have been more successful than heel JBL. Certainly. I don't know if it would have set the world on fire, but I think that would have been the better move.
Very possibly, yeah.
But anyway, they didn't do that. Orton kind of struggled in 05 and 06. You know, he was losing more than he won to The Undertaker, got in that feud with Hogan, didn't win because Hogan refused to lose during those
Didn't even win over Cena. Got the belt, as we said before, by default. He was going to, because that belt was probably going to have to go back and forth between him and Cena.
Starting in 07, Orton really came into his own. He sort of had to.
After dormancy. Remember that brutal spring for him and Edge? They were in Money in the Bank at... It was brutal. They were in Money in the Bank at WrestleMania 23.
Hold on. That face I made was not in regards to anything you were saying. It was in regards to my voice going up 20 octaves, and I was really embarrassed.
Okay.
No, you're right.
I thought you were questioning me on him having early 07, because it was horrible.
Well, you know, that four-way they did at Backlash,
should have been the main event at WrestleMania. That they should have done that a month earlier.
I liked that. Yeah, because, you know, again, it
needed the star power.
The parallel builds of we talk about this in previous episodes, of the Raw and SmackDown title matches.
You needed to have something different.
Kind of hurt. You're right. That was a great match, though, that four-way.
Right.
But, no, Orton really, it was kind of funny with Edge moving over to SmackDown then. Like, they really needed Orton in 07 to be what he had been previously.
Right.
And so he got a shot, and we already talked about it. They got too cute. He was supposed to beat Cena originally. He didn't. Cena gets hurt. He winds up winning the title at No Mercy in kind of this convoluted, you know, multi-match situation where there was three world title matches actually on that pay-per-view. And that show, by the way, did a good number because people were promised a new world champion.
Yeah.
Did a lot better than Survivor Series 2015, up to that much.
Also, 18 months before, it's Triple H representing the pride of the McMahon family against Randy Orton. You have it, No Mercy 07, Vince McMahon on Randy Orton's side against his son-in-law, Triple H. So there you go.
Well, they didn't have that in mind. Trust me, 2009 was the last thing in their mind at No Mercy 07.
Yeah.
So anyway, so that's Randy Orton's trajectory. The bottom line is that they got him, going into this match, they had him back where they had wanted him to be all along. You know, kind of after 2 years in the wilderness, he was back. And I think that plays into the fact, because it wasn't that long. Like, I mean... He wins the title in October. This is only January. I think the fact that, okay, we've got Orton back where we've always wanted him to be, I think that played into the role of Hardy not winning here. Now, Jeff Hardy, though, again, he's the only reason I can think that this number did pretty good.
Yeah.
Because it was new. He beat Triple H in a surprise at Armageddon. That was not the original plan. He was getting over more. And they changed that. They changed the decision, I believe, pretty last minute to have Hardy go over Triple H at Armageddon. They were kind of putting him over in commentary like this was going to be some new era.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Lawler kept saying it. By the way, here's a note that I have. Is Jeff Hardy a light heavyweight version of Kerry Von Erich?
That's very interesting.
I kept thinking, because he's kind of like, you know, a dumb hillbilly. And
well, you know, the girls love him. And Kerry never painted himself. But, I mean, that's a great question.
He reminds me of Kerry Von Erich.
The modern day warrior.
Yes, the modern, modern day warrior.
Well, listen.
I think I would have done here, and obviously it's a moot point because Jeff Hardy gets another bust for drugs and isn't even on WrestleMania.
Right.
Orton was clearly the long-term solution as champion, at least in 08. I would have had Hardy go over here, had Orton and obviously Cena returns at the end of the show, have Orton and Cena have some sort of schmoz finish at No Way Out to determine the number one contender.
Okay.
Where they both get a shot at WrestleMania.
Okay.
And insert Ric Flair in as well. My Raw title match, Hardy, Orton, Cena, Flair in a four-way.
And Flair retires if he doesn't win?
Yes.
Okay.
And so the crowd, it'd be funny. You have Orton with three baby faces.
Okay.
Flair's the crowd's choice.
Right.
I would have Orton pin all three baby faces. You have Randy Orton in prime position.
Yeah, that would work.
Hardy would go out first.
Yeah.
Again, I don't know if they could have held on. It's a moot point because the drugs.
Right.
Let's say they somehow, maybe he doesn't. But you have Hardy go out first.
Then Cena goes out second.
Yes,
you
and that's a surprise.
Last.
And then it comes down to Orton versus Flair. You talk about getting a guy over as a heel.
Right.
Because Shawn Michaels really didn't get anything out of that.
There would be no I'm sorry I love you in that finish.
No. Like, Shawn Michaels didn't get anything out of that, really.
No, he didn't.
He maybe personally did. It might have been nice for him to work.
We got a Rolex.
Yeah. But, yeah, that's right. But can you imagine with the Legend Killer gimmick to kill the Ultimate Lock? That's just what I would have.
Well, you know, and it's interesting, too, because I said to you off air, I mean, no small amount of irony, if you want to call it that, maybe hypocrisy, whatever. You're not putting the belt on Hardy because his personal issues. He's going up against 08 Randy Orton, who himself has a panoply of things wrong with him mentally. So, you know, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
People,
I will say,
I'm sorry.
But I just going to say, like, Hardy, he's one of the guys, when you look at that decade and what could have been, Hardy's, you know.
They did not maximize his potential.
Oh, my God. He's one of the few guys that you look at and you
think. They tried,
though,
a few times. He was his own worst enemy at times.
I'll grant you.
He was his own worst enemy.
But
they had to be leery of him.
Sure.
They had to be, especially in the post-Benoit world. There was some, like, legitimate fear that this guy could OD.
But, I mean, when I talk Lost Generation, and I talk about guys like Kennedy, MVP, Jeff Hardy towers over most names I mention for guys who could have been something. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Jeff Hardy is way above most of the names that we mentioned.
Yes.
I'm sorry, what was the point you were going to get to?
That I didn't learn, like, the out-of-nowhere finish in this match.
No, I agree.
Orton just kind of pinned him clean out of nowhere with the RKO.
And JR sold it that way.
For Hardy being built up as
it was just
this
like,
potential...
Oh, well.
New era champion. Wow, did he get beat pretty clean.
Also, JR referring in the match to the number one prize being the WWE title. So here we go. Mm-hmm. Formalizing what we already know.
Yeah. So this match was not as good as the Edge Mysterio title match, I don't believe. Which was odd because I think this was the match that people came to see.
I like this one as much. I did.
Oh, wow. I didn't.
Okay.
I didn't. But a lot of people, I went back and looked. There was a real negative reaction to Hardy not going over here at the time.
Sure, sure.
Because I really think that Jeff Hardy kind of being something new in the main event picture was the reason this show did significantly better than the Rumble the year previous and the Rumble the year after.
Well, and I'll tell you what. You go back to what we were talking about at the very beginning and turning the page on a bad 2007, symbolically anyway.
Sometimes you got to give the crowd a bone,
is
the way I feel with this match. Like, again, they didn't do a lot of good long-term planning for this WrestleMania.
Right.
And certainly the WrestleMania after.
Right.
And it's real easy for me to just kind of sit here and play armchair quarterback, you know, 7 years after the fact.
Right.
But I think that, man, if you're rebooking WrestleManias, not to fall in love with my own idea,
right?
I really love the idea of a four-way
where you have all
the elements there, and in the end, that's what they wanted, right?
I like
Randy
it, too.
Randy Orton being this awesome heel champion.
Right.
It was a lot better than him, like, kind of, like, you know, doing the slip on a banana peel finish that he did with Cena in Triple H.
I would agree with that. They get done with this thing, and they ran for this is the first time they've done this many years since the Rumble stats video. The first couple of years, they used the NFL Films music, as they did here. They actually mentioned China as a female
participant.
In
my notes, I was shocked by that.
That's right.
I was shocked. Of course, they did then say, but she didn't last very long.
Right.
Which I think I brought up in our 99
mm-hmm.
thing. It seemed to be a mistake. Like, I'm not a China fan. But they built that up really big on TV, and she was only in for like a minute.
Right.
So whatever. Yeah. Let's not. Yeah, that's funny. I caught that too.
Right.
Great
minds
think alike.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we both caught that in our notes. Buffer doing the ring entrance.
I have
thing
this
for
in
this
my
here,
notes.
To MSG.
Yes, there was no Brett Clark references. I don't know. I guess Michael Buffer makes things seem like a bigger deal, right?
He kind of does.
I really had this. There was a lot of hate to him, mm-hmm. like pointed in his direction, like by the end of his like WCW run.
He was just phoning it in. Let's
well,
be honest.
It was that. I think it was like WCW. It was just emblematic of the money they were foolishly throwing away.
Right.
Like, when you look at Michael Buffer doing, this is the only time they've ever used him for WWE, right?
I think so.
When you look at that, it's like, okay, again, MSG, uniqueness, unique feel. It's like, oh, Michael Buffer was on this show. That's different. With WCW, like, you did not need him at Fall Brawl 98.
And that's where, again, you know, we keep talking about this. The show felt unique. Mm-hmm. It had a special energy to it. And, the world's largest announce booth, Cole and Coach and JR and Waller and Taz and Styles, six guys.
And that was too many. Honestly, four announcers is probably one too many.
Yeah.
So this is three too many. I mean, Joey Styles, why he was even flown in here, I mean, I guess, you know, or was brought in.
Yeah.
He just seems so needless. A lot of his remarks got sort of shot down by
Michael
Cole.
They probably told him not to show up, and he did anyways.
Yeah. But anyway, let's talk about the Rumble match itself. So
all right.
This is a good one. This is one of my favorite Rumbles ever.
Me too. Me too. It's in my top 10. I tied for 7th. I give it 3.5 stars.
Okay, I'll be honest with you. It is in my top 4. It's tied for number 3 for me at 4 stars.
Okay. So we actually agree largely on this.
Yes. Good start. Undertaker number 1, Michaels number 2, playing into the fact that they were the final two the previous year.
Guess what's the only other year that has happened, apparently?
What?
I believe 2015, 2016, which this year ended with Reigns and Rusev. Of course, they didn't reference Taker Michaels 07-08.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I had Undertaker as someone going from number 30 the previous year to number 1 the next year. Ted DiBiase did that, as we know, 89
That's right.
and 90.
That's so. Right. By the way, first, as I have this in my notes, first mention of brands on the whole show of Michaels out there representing Raw, Taker out there representing SmackDown.
Again, so I'm very confident where we drew our line of delineation here because the brand split just totally didn't matter here.
Is it just me or was Shawn Michaels sort of like with his tights like it looked like he had a cod piece? I'm just gonna say it.
I don't know. I noticed he got a bloody nose. Pretty early. So
all right.
Santino Marella gets the token jobber treatment at number 3.
Yes. Get on my level.
Yes. let me bring up here.
Kali 4. So Taker.
Yeah, and you can see how far his stock had fallen.
Yep.
By the fact that, you know, in 07, he was positioned as this real monster who had just started tossing everyone.
Right.
Here, he was just, I mean, he didn't even last 2 minutes.
That's right.
You didn't have a lot of star power in this early. Undertaker and Michaels were really there to carry it.
Right.
You know, Hardcore Holly, John Morrison. Tommy Dreamer, always over at MSG, didn't last very long, though, in this.
When Morrison came in, I have this in my notes, there almost always seems to be a part of where it transitions from the early part to what starts to feel like a Rumble match. And when Morrison got in there, I felt like that was more or less the moment that was happening, when we were out of the early stuff and we were into sort of the meat of the match.
I have poor Morrison selling for Batista in this match. I mean, it's bad enough that it's bad enough that the man did his girlfriend, but my God, he doesn't even get any offense in either.
Oh, he's probably selling for Batista. I'm sure it's a lot worse when it's a shoot than a work.
I could not believe that the crowd actually got a little into the Jamie Noble Chuck Palumbo face-off, which was apparently a program at the time.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Hornswoggle at number 9 going under the ring.
Now that always works. Never was officially eliminated, Hornswoggle.
Well, and here's the interesting thing. Sometimes I find such randomness here. I noticed this in a match where I didn't notice it in other Rumble matches around that time. I simply say many lower players from the 90s boom. Holly, Noble, Palumbo, Big Daddy V, and Henry. People who didn't matter much during the late 90s boom but were used here.
You know, there was nobody there was none of those, what did we call those one-year wonders?
Right.
We didn't have a lot of one-year wonders in this.
That's right.
There weren't, the star power certainly wasn't what it
they
had
were,
been.
They were turning back to old hands, basically.
Yeah. Like, you know, from 6-7 years earlier, the star power is definitely a little down, and you can see that by the fact, you know, we should mention this, the Jimmy Snuka and Roddy Piper involvement. Crowd went kind of wild for that.
Not only that, Foley coming out later, too. I mean, you know, setting up these, you know, resetting these vaunted MSG moments.
Yes.
The crowd was into it.
Sometimes I don't like those legend moments. I kind of roll my eyes. These were okay.
I felt like they worked.
It was confined pretty short. I mean, Jimmy Snuka is what he is now.
Right.
And, you know, that's certainly, you know, I don't know. You... Jimmy.
Oh, man.
Jimmy.
Oh, man.
She slipped. She slipped.
Hit her head, brother. Yeah. But in terms of a cool spot, I have this in my notes. One of the cool.
Yeah, I have this in here. When Piper comes out, Snuka looks so shocked you'd have thought Nancy Argentino walked out.
That's just over the line. Yes. An amazing cool spot here between three vaunted all-time workers here. Punk is getting ready to do a bulldog on Shawn Michaels and gets clotheslined out of his boots by Undertaker. Just a great spot.
Yeah, I think Punk, by the way, I had to do a little investigating here, a little homework. He was in the doghouse during this period. He had lost the ECW to Chavo.
To Chavo.
Yeah. And this was the second year in a row he was in this match for a while but didn't do anything.
He didn't stay in the doghouse that long, though, because he would go on to win Money in the Bank.
Well, remember, Jeff Hardy was originally supposed to win that.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
So,
yeah, plan B.
Yeah, I had forgotten about Foley. I guess he had even won a qualifying match that involved Hornswoggle or something like this. You know, Mr. Kennedy had that bad 07. He was still over in this match.
Well, and in terms of guys
over.
That you could tell they were, at this point, still looking at for the future, another one of those guys would be the aforementioned John Morrison, because he kept tangling with HBK such that I have in my notes JR even talked about it. Like, when an announcer is calling attention to something, it's supposed to mean something.
Yeah, unlike Punk, who, like, really the announcers didn't call much attention
right,
to Punk.
And JR's kind of like, well, a lot of people see similarities with John Morrison and a young HBK, so that was supposed to mean something.
Similar to 07, I think this match suffered a little bit from too many guys being in it.
Well,
at
then,
one point. Like, I have it here at number 23, I have ring is too full. And then that's when it really kind of, all of a sudden, they sort of overcompensate with a lot of eliminations. That's when HBK and Taker, who had, again, remember, been in this since the beginning.
Yeah.
They were doing 90-second intervals this year, by the way, for the record.
Right.
They just kind of go bang, bang. Out of nowhere, Undertaker and Michaels. And then Undertaker buries poor Gene Snitsky instead of Michaels, who eliminated him.
Well,
no, he gets mad. Like, Michaels dumps Taker, and then Michaels gets dumped right after. And they're standing right there.
Right.
And it's really awkward. Undertaker's like, well, I'm just going to go bury this Gene Snitsky right now. Not that, anyone's going to weep for Gene Snitsky, but I thought that was odd.
I was shocked he was still around. I didn't remember that he lasted that long on and off. But, you know, you talk again about Bloom off the rose with some guys, hashtag lost generation. I have in my notes Sheldon Benjamin, blinking you miss him. He was barely in there.
Yeah,
a guy who would have, could have, should
have
meant
something. The announcers were shocked.
Yeah.
The announcers were like, oh, my God, Shelton's gone already?
But by early 08, he really should have meant something, and he never did.
We talked about Hornswoggle not ever being eliminated in this match. Finley disqualified?
That's the only disqualification in Rumble history, as best as I can tell, from now having rewatched and watched all of them. Yeah, that was a weird kind of a thing. Also, too, Hornswoggle didn't go out over the top.
Yeah, that's what I said. He was never re-enter, never eliminate. Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's get to the end. And I'm not talking about Elijah Burke coming out at number 20. So, like 07, one thing that I learned by these two Rumbles and having them so high is, man, can a great ending go a long way in making a Rumble.
It can.
You really had no clue who was going to win this. I guess you would have thought Triple H coming out at 29.
Mm-hmm.
But then the buzzer goes off for number 30, and lo and behold, it's John Cena. And all of your people, okay, who think they're so cool, their Cena sucks chance, lost their shit.
Yeah. Well, there should have been, John Cena sucks. There was none of that.
No, they were all kissing his ass.
Yep.
This is one of the great Rumble moments of all time. There's no denying it.
Sure.
When he, I remember watching this live, being stunned. He was supposed to be out for months.
Right.
After this,
gonna miss Mania.
Yes. He showed up. It was sold. I mean, the place went crazy for him. I guess Triple H was gonna win this. Had Cena not been in it, which would have been terrible. I need to talk. I think this is low point Triple H. His babyface run during this period. God, was he uninteresting.
Well, and that's, you know, he went on a real heel-burying spree that year on SmackDown. He did finally make it to SmackDown in that main event role. By the way, just side notes here. We talked about Punk not doing anything. Chavo as ECW champion. Yeah, so there was that. Chavo eliminating him. But there's a thing here, and I want to get your thoughts about this in a second, and I'm going to set this up for you. Something that was completely unprecedented in the history of the Rumble was Chavo coming in as ECW champion, presumably, I suppose, to get a shot at WrestleMania at the World or WWE title. But for a situation where, at least theoretically, I know it doesn't pass the laugh test, but of where you're supposed to have these titles more or less being on the same level, being a situation where the winner of the Rumble will get his choice of a pick of them, seeing Chavo in there as though he is the Intercontinental Champion or the U.S. Champion, and I have nothing against Chavo Guerrero, and I've always said he's deserved better than he's gotten from almost every promotion he's ever been in. But the point is, you know, you were mid-cardizing the ECW title by putting it on him, and then Chavo being in the ECW, in the match as ECW champion, you can't justify that on any level.
I guess they just didn't have room for him on the undercard.
So leave him off the show.
I guess so. Like, that didn't even dawn on me, really. And that's a really good point. But
it cheapened
it. You know what's funny?
What?
Is, like, Joey Styles, this was the only good point he got to make during the match.
Uh-huh.
Was he's like, oh, you know, a lot of these guys, if they win, yeah, they're probably going to choose the Raw or SmackDown champion. But if Tommy Dreamer wins, he's going to choose ECW.
Yes.
So, yeah, I guess what would you have done? I mean, obviously, it's one of those things that they don't bother thinking about because they think their audience isn't going to think much about it. And it's sort of a waste of time because Chavo was not going to win this match.
Well, and they could try and play it if they wanted to as a heel megalomania move. I want to get a second title, but still.
And by the way, he jobs in, what, 20 seconds at WrestleMania to Kane?
If that, yeah.
I think it was even less. It was the record.
But to circle back around at the end there, you have Triple H, you have Cena, you have some others, and quickly it dissipates to where it's the face-off of Triple H and Cena.
And Batista. We should mention
Batista.
Batista,
that's right.
I thought.
Oh,
Batista was
that's
a major
right. That's right.
It's funny because rarely do they have a final three in a Rumble.
It's usually four.
It's usually two or four is when they make the big deal, and it's an even number. Here they did the big three. I'm going to be honest with you. Maybe you'll roll your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of liked when they all did their little token, like, what's the term I'm looking for?
The mocking type thing?
Yeah, like it was the three of them staring, and Cena did the "you can't see me" to both of them.
Yeah.
Batista looked at both of them, did the thumbs up, thumbs down move. I love that, by the way.
And Triple H did the crotch chop.
Yeah, of course, yes, he got to go last. Oh, yes. That worked well, and this is one of, I guess when Cena came out, you probably figured he was going to win at that moment.
Right.
But, man, this was another second year in a row with a strong Rumble finish. Even a lot of those earlier ones that we talked about, they kind of peaked early in the match. Like, for instance, like 90. Like, I like the 90 Rumble. I think it's in my top eight. But, like, that match clearly peaks with the Hogan Warrior.
That's right.
Face off. And then, like, after that, it's sort of like, it kind of limps to a finish. And there's other Rumbles, too.
They were still finding their way with it, in all fairness.
But, like, the great Rumbles, 92. And these are my opinion of the top Rumbles, 92, 04, 07, and this one. Those are my four favorites.
I all count 02 peak in there also.
Okay. That one's it was pretty good, but I think it was definitely noticeably below those. You didn't really know who was going to win until the end, and that's huge. That's huge.
But this is the cheat also of the brand split era, because you didn't know. You any one of these three guys could have won, and it would have made sense. Because you put them in a battle for one of the two titles that you have.
And, well, guess what?
The stakes are lower.
Triple H wound up remember, challenging for the title with Cena WrestleMania. Because Cena, they did the unusual thing where Cena couldn't wait for WrestleMania.
Totally
and he
stupid.
Challenged Orton at No Way Out. And
I hated that.
They went to a schmoz finish, and then Triple H got involved by winning some number one contenders match.
Oh, I totally hated
that. Yeah, that was kind of bad. But so Cena obviously goes over.
Right.
And I really liked the ending of this, and like I said, this is one of my favorite Rumbles ever. I gave it 4 stars.
Well,
of four Rumbles to ever get 4 stars or above from me.
I made note additionally that the closest Triple H ever came to getting his heat back from Batista was eliminating him here. Additionally, 2008, and we talked about this, the start of this particular era, if you want to call it that, or grouping that we're using for our purposes anyways, PG was not totally in yet because I was interested to note that the attitude adjustment was still called the FU on this show. Not for too much longer. But again, I have in my notes that I rated this one as 3.5 stars, tied for 7th best all time. I have it tied with 2003. So I have it below the top 5 ones that I have here on my list.
So I like this one a little more is what you're saying.
Yes. Yes, you like it a little more than me, but there are some of these where we disagree wildly. This is probably one of the ones where we are going
you
to be
it,
closest.
You gave it, 3.5?
I gave it 3.5. What'd
That's
you say?
That's pretty close, 4.
4, okay. All right.
That's pretty close. 4 for me, though, is big. It's one of only 4 Rumbles, like I said, that I give 4 stars or above to. And I'll be honest with you, I'm gonna, little spoiler alert.
Yeah.
None of the Rumbles from here on out are going to get 4 stars.
Interesting.
Most of them won't even come close to 4 stars.
I don't, I'm looking at this here, I don't have anything that comes after this, because I've watched all of them now. I don't have any of them rated higher than this. Oh, and at first I thought 2013 was a tie, and it's not. 2013 comes the closest to this, but yeah, there has not been, so you and I agree on that also. There's not been, since 2008, a better Rumble
There's
show.
One that's I have one that's pretty close,
okay.
Where they basically copy the same storyline they went with here.
I know the one you're talking about. I felt like that was a lackluster match overall.
Ooh, well,
I'll
have to watch again. I felt the last time I watched it, I really liked it. The thing with me is I've, other than 2011 to 2013, I feel I've watched all of these multiple times. So I guess I could change, but I feel like I enjoyed that.
Very interesting.
So that's what we have. John Cena, your surprise winner. I feel we should have given that more because that was really one of the great Rumble moments in history.
It is.
John Cena, not like the fact they were able to keep that from everyone. I mean, it was a legit, like, surprises can be overrated.
Right.
Like, there's this group of people, so they're going fans, that, oh, surprises. What are the surprises going to be? You know,
right.
Surprises for the sake of surprises.
That's Russo.
They don't always work.
Yeah.
But this is a surprise that was an absolute out-of-the-park home run.
It was. It worked tremendously. And, again, you had, again, what came after this as far as the Raw WWE title storyline
was not
limping
good.
Into WrestleMania was not good. But for a very good WrestleMania, this set the tone for it. And to go full circle from what we said at the beginning.
I don't think I like WrestleMania 24 as much as you do.
I
have it on the outskirts. It's not in my top 10.
Oh, it's comfortably in my top 10, verging on my top 5.
I think I have it.
I enjoy it.
I think I have it as number 11.
I enjoy it a lot. And again, This was a one of the better WrestleMania seasons that they have done, really, since the product really
no
started
Way
to get
Out
stale.
Did big business. I'm looking at this, speaking of numbers. No Way Out was, because I think that this was the first time in February of 08 that they went to the dual elimination chambers.
Right.
And that did a big number, too. So
by the
they
way,
made a lot
too,
of money during this period.
And here's the
bad
funny
as
thing.
Things seem to be on the surface.
And they did that without pre-advertising on No Way Out, the show Mayweather angle, where Mayweather broke Show's nose.
Yes,
they didn't even advertise that ahead of time.
Yeah, yeah.
Think of the business they could have done had they teased that. So, but yeah, this Rumble did what it needed to do. You and I both liked it a lot, and it's kind of going to be downhill from here. I'll tell you this, spoiler alert here: 2009, just one that I found really underwhelming, and not nearly
I'm
the urgency
gonna
of the show.
I'm going to rewatch it here this week.
Yeah,
I remember being like kind of in the. Well, the Rumble match itself being in the average to below average category. So I anticipate a bit of a nosedive here as well. And I'm sure we're going to talk about Randy Orton a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure we're going
next
to.
Next time around.
The 2009 show, not nearly as good as this one, but I know our conversation absolutely will be. Thank you for listening, everybody.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.